Hey, hey, this is Cedric, your host of the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. And before we get into this fantastic episode with Texas Slim, I want to tell you about our amazing sponsors. To really own Bitcoin and have self-sovereignty over your money, you need to take self-custody of your Bitcoin and get it off of your exchange. Now go that extra step and secure your Bitcoin from a single point of failure and physical disaster with a Cypher Wheel or the new CypherGrid seed storage device. CypherSafe provides important tangible security tools for Bitcoin. CypherSafe seed storage devices focus on securing your Bitcoin with beautiful, elegant, practical devices that are machined from solid stainless steel. The Cypher Wheel is designed to be physically locked with a padlock and comes with a tamper evidence seal, so you can be aware of any attempts to steal your seed words. It's also waterproof, fireproof, rustproof, and foolproof. So keep your sats safe. Go to CypherSafe.io and use the code MATRIX to get 10% off your order. Ledin offers interest-bearing savings accounts and Bitcoin-backed loans with the best rates in the entire industry, enabling users to access dollars or additional Bitcoin without needing to sell your existing holdings. Listeners of the Bitcoin Matrix podcast get $50 in USDC when you become a Ledin user and take out a Ledin loan using our link. To learn more, sign up at start.ledn.io/Bitcoin Matrix. Between working from home, mandates, and lockdowns, you might be thinking about adding an extra room at the house or renting a place to escape or retreat from encroaching communism. I know that I am. Citadel Cabins is in the custom building industry, and they are famous for small log cabins that can be shipped anywhere and easily assembled by you and a couple of friends in just a few days without any specialized skills or power tools. Imagine adding a room to your house or dropping a cabin in the woods. As we descend deeper and deeper into clown world, the cabins are creating a way for families to escape and establish KYC-free location sovereignty, surrounded by people who care about freedom as much as you do. Or maybe you want to get off the grid completely. If you are a landowner, investor, renter, or you want to provide support via your labor or expertise, Citadel Cabins has a program that's right for you. Citadel Cabins is a Bitcoin-only company that exists to help individuals achieve shelter, rest, security, and location independence. Head over to CitadelCabins.com for more information and to fill out an application now. Bitcoin 2022 is the largest Bitcoin event in the world that takes place April 6th to 9th in Miami Beach, Florida. All 4 days will be jam-packed with exclusive content, exciting announcements, and an incredible lineup of Bitcoin speakers, artists, and leaders. Day one is Industry Day for enterprising Bitcoiners who are looking to build a business or career within the ecosystem. Days two and three are general conference days, featuring speakers like El Salvador President Bukele, who has promised a big surprise, as well as CEOs like Michael Saylor, Elizabeth Stark, Jack Mallers, Adam Back, and hundreds more. The conference caps off on the fourth day with the world's first and largest Bitcoin music festival, Sound Money Fest, headlined by rapper and fellow Bitcoiner Logic, CL, Run the Jewels, San Holo, Deadmau5, and many more. Last year's conference sold out, and this year's is on the pace to be 3 times larger, so make sure you grab your tickets before it's too late. Visit b.tc/conference to learn more. Pay in Bitcoin to save and use promo code Bitcoin Matrix for 10% off, and I will see you in Miami. And now, let's enter the Bitcoin Matrix for this important conversation and wake-up call with Texas Slim about the medical, pharmaceutical, agricultural complex, Monsanto, Coca-Cola, the doomsday global seed vault, and how do-gooding is the modern-day feudalism.
What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Texas Slim is the author of The Harvest of Deception, The Source of the Seed, Political Beef Deception, We Are Overfed and Undernourished. He's the founder of the Beef Initiative and Food Intelligence. He's also the host of Texas Slim's Vision podcast, and he's a badass by default. Texas Slim, welcome back to the Bitcoin Matrix. How are you?
I'm doing well, Cedric. How are you? It's good to see you.
Yeah, I'm doing great. It's good to see you. It feels like a year has passed in the few months that we've gotten to talk.
It was. I was trying to think about that today. Was that in November or when was that? I think that was
either late October or very early November.
Something like that. Yeah.
Second week of November. And I know you've been up to a lot. The world, I think, has been sort of up to a lot. I think even so much has happened since then. And I kind of want to talk about, you know, I saw a tweet today. You mentioned you were headed to Asia to ride motorcycles before the global marketing plan was released on the world. So I didn't even know that you rode motorcycles or were headed over to Asia at this point in your life.
Yeah, I mean, I'd done some contracts and stuff like that. I've always been a wanderlust type of guy. And, you know, I've traveled a lot. A lot of other people have traveled a hell of a lot more than I have, but I've done well with my resources. And so I'd come to a place and I was like, man, because I've been over to Asia before. I'd spent some time over there and I'd rode motorcycles. I've been riding motorcycles since I was five. So dirt bikes, and then that went into street bikes. I've rode enduros. I've ridden, you know, Harley. I've rode a few. I'll just put it that way. So I like to ride a motorcycle, and I'd been to Asia, you know, and I wanted to get back there. I wanted to go explore the people again. I wanted to just kind of be free and just spend about a year or two over there, just kind of looking at history, just diving into some place I'd been before, but I wanted to kind of go a little bit deeper with it, with the culture, with just, you know, the history of Asia in general, because I believe it's going to have a huge influence on us moving forward.
Yeah. That sounds like an awesome experience. Like I kind of get the calling and sort of the wake up and your call to action here. And, you know, our last conversation kind of struck me in several ways. There were several things that really stuck out coming out of that conversation around the global marketing plan, Monsanto and Bayer. You know, we covered seed oils, but, you know, rapeseed and canola oils and sort of how the farmer is captured there. Another thing that really struck me was how food has gotten 10 times worse in the last 10 years. And I didn't see really that sort of S curve. I just saw it sort of more gradually. Mm-hmm. We touched on a little bit. And I think this where we'll go a little bit deeper is maybe on MPAC and Glasgow was coming up. And that's sort of tied into maybe the global marketing campaign, but sort of things that we almost touched on a little bit, but I want to go here is where what really happened with sort of consolidation in sort of these huge businesses around 96 or 2008, or probably more importantly, 2013.
Well, you just saw a push. I mean, if you look back during those times, there was always narratives about, you know, kind of the one world order and all that kind of crap. And it's, if you look at the consolidation of corporations that are involved with our food systems, and you kind of pay attention to the industrialization of our food, the type of money that's being used to expand these corporations, you see a power. You see a kind of a power struggle, and the winner is takes all. The winner is the one that gets, you know, more global than anybody else. You can access a lot of resources that way, and a lot of times we were able to defend off that. As United States of America, we've been very self-sustaining in many, many ways. And this is a very deep discussion that we, you know, don't need to go into right now. But as those years that you listed moved forward, more consolidation started happening with our food. More technology came into our food. Whenever technology comes into your food, you're getting further away from your food. It's that simple. And so as we move forward with technology and innovation within, you know, we run into all kinds of stuff as far as nanotechnologies, everything that's kind of coming to fruition right now. And so you get that consolidation of technology at the same time that people are pushing for food and the narrative is we're going to always feed the world. Then that's a global, you know, competition that affects your consumption, because what is the true agenda here? You know, the true agenda is not to feed you pure nutrition. The more you process a food, the less nutrition it has. That is not science. That's just life. That is just how things work. And a lot of times that's not even taught as far as that level of common sense. You know, especially in America, we're very, unfortunately, the last 50 years, we've become very ignorant towards what food is. Mm-hmm. And they take advantage of that with consolidation. The more ignorant we are, more consolidation, because you then become, right now is the big attempts as far as digitizing our food in certain ways. You know, we become the product more than the food is the product. We become the recycling bin of the trash, and we do it well. And there's a lot of chemical companies that are behind this as well. One very interesting one that I've been looking into right now is Royal DSM. And what they do is they introduce many, many, many chemicals into learning and how to manipulate taste buds. And so talk about all kinds of different chemicals that we're ingesting because we say, oh, I know it's kind of bad for me, but it tastes good. Well, you know, guess what? What is the agenda now? Well, we're going to make sure everything tastes good. That creates innovation within chemical companies, seed companies, and they all consolidate intelligence. And so they devise plans, and around that becomes these global marketing plans that are derived out of their agendas, and they try to make it look pretty cool. Well, and whenever they have this consolidation, it's the same thing. It's always the same agenda. We got to feed the world. And that's just not how you feed the world, is through industrialization and processing of foods. You feed the world by teaching small communities how to be self-sustaining.
Yeah. That's very interesting that you mentioned talking about communities and teaching them how to be self-sustainable. It's very interesting. You mentioned technology. I remember even maybe as a teenager in my early 20s, I remember seeing these labs, or maybe a documentary about these labs in New Jersey that would perfect sort of the smell for different products, but from anything from perfume, but you could see that it was really going towards food.
Yeah.
And it was just really kind of eerie, very Willy Wonka.
exactly.
And you could see back then sort of the seeds for what that could be used for in terms of manipulating your taste buds and going sort of on technology though, and Monsanto, how did Monsanto get its start?
You know, that's a funny story. I think I apologize for not knowing the guy's name. He was on Joe Rogan, and he kind of brought up a lot of issues.
Barto Elmore?
I think it was.
Yeah, he's going to come on soon.
Oh, that's great. He'll go way deep into this. I think he wrote a book or something, but I kind of came across it, and I kind of written about it before. And so it was kind of interesting timing. But, you know, Monsanto was a failed chemical company at one time. And then they were, I believe it was Chicago. And then all of a sudden they found this company called Coca-Cola, and Coca-Cola found them, and they needed caffeine. And so what they did is they learned how to basically get the caffeine out of tea leaves that were going to waste. And so they were able to industrialize caffeine in a way that Coca-Cola could use and grow their business. So once that happened, Monsanto just became a chemical company that started being interjected into our food systems, our consumption systems. And so they've had many years of, you know, Agent Orange. They've done a lot of different, there's a lot of different things that Monsanto did that, you know, there's plenty of things to point at. And I don't want to go way deep into Monsanto. They have a history, and they are a chemical company. And they're a chemical company now that is owned by Bayer, which is actually the biggest, one of the biggest medical pharmaceutical companies in the world. And Bayer is from Germany. Bayer existed before World War II, and they didn't really have too much problem keeping on existing after World War II.
Yeah. And we don't have to go too deep into it, but did Coca-Cola and Monsanto have a sort of a long going relationship after that?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I mean, they innovated together, of course. I mean, that's what chemical companies do.
Right.
And, you know, that's common sense that would happen. But, you know, whenever you innovate together, you know, whenever you're dealing with stuff like chemicals, you know, it gets pretty creative, and, you know, things become the agendas become different, especially whenever they're being backed by, after 1971, by a dollar that had gone off the gold standard. Once again, we go back to the, you know, you and I talked about fake commodities and how they started, you know, using chemicals to change our food systems. So there's a lot of charts, and, you know, I'm going to do that this year, put some really good charts together that can kind of correlate the advancements of this technology in the chemical systems and with our food systems.
Yeah. I'm looking at one of your graphics here from 1996 to 2013, representing the consolidation of these huge companies. And it does, it sort of looks like sort of the night sky of, or suns and planets gathering around them, or moons gathering around a planet. You know, the big ones though, Monsanto, DuPont, kind of familiar with those, but Syngenta I never heard of. That was kind of interesting. And what is a technology use agreement, and when did that sort of come into play, and how does that affect things?
Technology use agreement is designed by a chemical company, which is Monsanto. And a technology use agreement was created because due to contracts, due to a lot of negotiations that happen with these chemical companies, technology use agreement is basically used to target farmers and ranchers to say, you're going to use this type of seed, you're going to use this type of herbicide, you're going to use this type of pesticide, et cetera, every year. If you do not use these seeds in the way you're supposed to, if you don't follow these rules that you're signing with this technology use agreement, then you are out of business. Basically, you can't do business with us. And so we pretty much control your, you know, all the subsidies that come through. You look at how commodities are, you look at everything that gets involved with that technology use agreement. Well, therefore, what is the agenda here? Is the agenda to grow actually a very good product and to make sure that this nation is healthy? No, it's not. It's basically to keep on creating chemicals that they can induce into the system, which has actually killed our soil, and it's killed our medical health as a country. We're bankrupt right there. And if you're not aware of that, you know, there's plenty of proof of that.
Right. And so what is brown bagging then? Like, I mean, this goes really deep, these sort of tug-lim agreements, not just around the technology being put into the seed, but so what is brown bagging?
Brown bagging is what, you know, farmers have been, and ranchers that, you know, do their own type of growing. Basically, brown bag, it's how we got here, man. This is what we did, was we grew grains, we grew plants, we grew everything, fruits, vegetables, and we kept the seeds and we used them again the next year. And we kept on doing that and doing that and doing that. And it was not an issue. And then now, if you're part of the USDA, FDA, everything, all these, you know, agriculture departments, everything that basically enforces the type of farming that you do. And, you know, if you're part of that, you're basically have become a technician. And this is not a stab at anybody. It's just what it is. You got all kinds of different farmers and everything. If you're not part of the USDA system, you're not relying on them, you can brown bag. But then we get into problems with GMO and how we can cross-pollinate. I mean, there's so many things that have gone awry with the way that we're doing it in the industrial food complex. And it's coming to a head in a lot of different ways. And a lot of people want to live in denial. A lot of people do not want to talk about it because they're captured by it. And I understand that, you know, and this is not something that it's, like I say, I never say this is a judgment, but this is a wake up call. And it's, I'm not the only one saying this. This has been being said for years. All of a sudden, I think people are starting to pay attention, which is awesome. And it's something that we definitely need as a nation, because we got to lead this, you know, understanding and this awareness that we're consuming chemicals every day that have no names, because they don't have to be reported by the FDA. That is not healthy. You can go all the way from Roundup to anything that's been used in the last freaking, you know, 100 years almost. And there's going to be cover-ups, there's going to be lawsuits, there's going to be everything. There's going to be stuff that people just don't pay attention to because they don't have access to it because it gets covered up. But two, it's like we move in such a fast society that we don't even I was thinking the other day, whenever you cowboy, okay, and you're out there all day and you work your ass off, you don't think about eating that much. You know, you have jerky, whatever it is, but that's the last thing that you want to focus on. And so once we get like that, you know, you're going to eat, and you're going to eat hard, and you're going to get full. And, you know, they've carried that over into society that where you don't really have to get that type of hunger that you get do whenever you're working like that. It's just there all the time because the food has no substance. It's supposed to burn off every 4 hours, so you'll be hungry again, and you're supposed to feel tired, and you're supposed to get these rushes. The way that food is right now is designed in a chemical way to induce your body to create its own chemicals that are making you die a slow death.
Yeah, and it's permeating in so many ways, and there's so much capture at so many levels. Yes. At the micro and the macro, and we get to the macro in a second, but I'm just really blown away by the extent of these tug agreements, because they don't just control the seed now, and they don't just control what seed you can grow, so therefore what crop you can sort of produce, but even where you can sell the crop, I guess. And they control what, the elevators? What are these elevators?
Yeah, it's the grain elevators. If you go across the Midwest, especially the Midwest, this part of Texas that I'm in, they're just these big, you know, the old ones, of course, they're just these big towers that are just concrete tubes. And basically you put all the grain, you know, they come from harvest and then they come to the grain elevators. They were in the beginning, you know, once we got the railroads and everything, they just put them close to the railroad. So you get your grain in the local community. The local community would get its grain for the year usually. And then it would be the rest of it was sold off, whatever. But they were feeding their community first, and basically the trains would come and then that grain would be shipped. And it still happens today a lot like that. But as far as the grain and its use of what it's used now is changed a bit. And so, and you know, you look at the global agricultural world, how much do we export? How much do we import? And I'll save that for beef a little bit later, because it's a pretty fascinating understanding and some clarity that people need to know about their animal protein and those USDA stamps and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, I just really want to outline a little bit more. What is this, Monsanto?
Actually, that was the food groups right there.
Okay. That's the food groups. And
the food corporations. The Monsanto is that the one you referred to earlier.
Right. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sort of all these groups, though, they dominate the export and import of basic foodstuffs, wheat, soy, corn, rice, sugar, dairy, tropical products. They intervene to determine where crops are grown, which they call export sourcing and value chain development. They engage and often set speculation on the commodity exchanges. They dominate world crop and livestock research and genetics with wrongful patent intellectual property rights to seeds, breeds, and even biotech procedures. They dominate fertilizer and other agrochemicals, development pricing, and availability. They dominate food processing. They position their operations to control retail, final distribution of food, and dictate prices and standards to suppliers. A rancher who does not sell his beef at the depressed price offered by these five firms will starve. There's almost no one else to sell to. And of course, they thought any and all attempts at national food self-sufficiency. So that one in particular really blew me away, as well as sort of controlling the retail pricing of all this stuff.
Sure.
And you bring it up, it sort of reminds you of the British East India Company and sort of just wielding this sort of power around.
Mm-hmm.
And we sort of talked about mass hunger, starvation, and maybe that's a form of genocide. But like, how do we, like, you know, when we talk about maybe one of these entities like Cargill, like how do we outline how large of an enterprise this is? Because this is not a name that's just really thrown around like Microsoft or Bill Gates or Google. And you know, we were sort of outlining how much they control this and a few other entities have over the entire food supply across what's continents. You control what they eat in Australia or South America or what have you. I mean, how do you compare this entity to maybe something else?
I don't think you can compare the power of the seed companies to anything. They're as closest to the money as you can get. You control the, you know, you control the seed, you control the world. And it's that simple. So if you want to put that into perspective, I think I wrote in, you know, with the research that they have a, you know, a security and intelligence apparatus that can mirror the CIA. Right. And you can do a search on that. And I think it was 7,000 people that are just like, you know, they're in intelligence. It's an intelligence apparatus. Well, if you have an intelligence apparatus that is that size, you also have a security apparatus around that seed. Just as much. And I can see why that is justifiable, but it, in a way that they try to make it out to be that, you know, as far as their control of the seed without the supervision and actually the true non-capture part of how they've used that seed against us, you know, there's a problem there, but they're untouchable. I mean, you can't get to Cargill and that family. They've got a history. You can trace it back pretty far, but to have that much power over a seed that basically feeds the world, they have barges, they control ports, they control shipping lanes. You know, you think about that. That is an apparatus that nobody has access to, and nobody knows really how to talk about it. You know, how do you approach that? You know, we don't even really understand foreign, you know, countries' armies. Well, do you think that they do not emulate intelligence, armies, military? I mean, without the seed, we're nothing. And that's why I always talk about the source of the seed. This is a powerful, you know, structure. And how do you approach that? Well, let's get back to the source of our own seed. And, you know, that's why I always talk about, let's look back at our grandparents and find out how they lived, because they were powerful people. It's the only reason we are here right now. And people forget that, you know, life and nutrition doesn't have to be controlled by these apparatus structures. And so I, you know, as powerful as Cargill is, they don't control my life, even though they try to. I do use Cargill because you have to. You know, this is not a black and white subject, but as far as understanding that they're a powerful apparatus, the type of intelligence that they wield over our lives, you know, that's something that if you're aware of, why do you have to ask any more questions about their power? Why don't you look at your own power and see what your resources are? Because every time that, you know, we get into this, and everybody is guilty of this, you know, as in me included, is like, you know, they're my distraction and I'm not going to pay attention to that distraction anymore because they want it so bad. And how they want it is to consume what they're doing. I'm not going to consume what they're doing anymore. Yeah. That's good enough for me, you know? And you look at those families and all the different types of seed families you have across, you know, the world, you think that they are not best friends, or they have pretty big contracts or understandings that, you know, we're going to work together on this. Do you think they're in competition? No, they're in cahoots as far as doing it, how they've been doing it. Whenever you look at food today and you look at it seems like it's in a cartoon. When you walk down shopping in the grocery aisles, and in the colors, in the pictures, and the enticing things that they're doing with psychology to make your kids want to eat that. It's not about consumption of nutrition, is it? And so do you think that they don't have the marketing apparatus behind that seed? You know, marketing, you know, we're, especially in the United States of America, we're the best marketers in the world. When you have to market your food to that extent, you better not be eating it, because a lot of time and effort was put in to say, you know, you really need to eat this. It's not because anything that's going to do for your life. It's because we're selling you this product and you need to buy it again because you're going to get addicted to it.
Yeah.
You know, let that, I mean, we can talk about sugar, you know, let's see when sugar was introduced into the American diet on a mass scale, and you just follow sugar. You look at diabetes right now, and you look how sugar is commoditized and subsidized, and how much of our tax dollars goes to creating all the sugar. And there wasn't enough sugar. And then we have to get high fructose corn syrup. the manipulation and the overprocessing of these seeds is phenomenal, and they're very good at it. And the one thing that I only have to worry about now is I'm gonna get that pure seed of life. I'm gonna get that pure seed of the truth of where food comes from. How I get there, there's gonna be a lot of different ways for all of us to get there. And we can't generalize this. We have to put it into perspective where we can persevere with our consumption. And we have not been doing that as a nation. And, you know, we have to take a step back, use this time in history that we have right now and say, this is a time for some awakening. This is a time to understand that we were hoodwinked. It's okay. Now we know. Now it's time to come somewhat, get a little pissed off because, you know, you look at all the innocence that has been lost in the last couple of years. And how everybody put on their whatever COVID-20, I don't know what they're calling it. I heard something about that. But you look at it and how 46% of American kids are now obese or overweight. How can that be acceptable? How can anybody not look at the food consumption of this nation and say, you know, hey, that's not a problem, or they just want to ignore just a few little things like, you know, that what's happening even just the last 50 years, or like you said before, even the last 10 to 15 years. And if you get on that track, and if you go to my Substack and that newsletter, it is pretty well, you know, tracked out as far as you can follow a pattern.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely see everything you're saying. You know, my reaction to that is, you know, I kind of really understand why people are so lost in this and fish swimming in water as sort of the modern fiat man who grew up in suburban New York City. I was seven dimensions from the food. My parents were great cooks. They made a lot of home cooking, but we brought in a lot of food and we had a lot of microwavable food and frozen dinners and things of that nature. And food just got more and more packaged. It just kind of got delivered to the house. I know my parents went to the store and brought it, but like I could just wake up in the morning and there'd be food. I remember I went to Fiji when I traveled the South Pacific by myself for a few months. And I'm in Fiji and I went to a lot of remote villages. And I remember the first thing I noticed is, you know, some of the villages had sort of hatch huts and things of that, but some used tarp. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, so they're bringing in some modern things that are inexpensive, that are very useful. And then I noticed that some of maybe at the pantry in one village, they had some storable goods like a ramen soup and, you know, dime a package, and they could subsist off that. But it was also like, why are they eating this junk? You know, and you keep talking about sort of the seed and control of the seed. And that's been really hard for me to sort of digest or sort of intellectualize, because I don't think about my food from the seed. It's just there at the supermarket. Even, you know, if I can get a steak at a restaurant served to me, I'm not going to the butcher even. I'm not bringing it home. I'm not grilling it. You could be so far removed from the food. And I think just this last 10 years, it's probably crept up on a lot of people like me, because for the last 10 years, some of us have been raising kids and working jobs and, you know, really just give them what we used to eat. And it's gotten way worse. From the candy bars on Halloween tastes like crap, and the cereal is just pure sugar and chemicals. And you talk about the colors of the supermarket and all this sort of marketing designed towards kids. And what really blew my mind, what are these global seed vaults?
Yeah, that's over in... What is that? Norway, I believe it was. Yeah. Yes, it's over. It's SVALD's fold. The vault. It's the doomsday vault of seeds. And so it's pretty fascinating story. There's got a lot of good donors to make sure that vault is ultra secure. And it's got a many, many millions of species of heirloom seeds there. And basically it's under lock and key. A lot of the seeds that actually help us, you know, the origins of who we are came from those seeds, and we don't have control over those seeds anymore. And they do. And when I say they, it's the seed companies, it's donors, it's the billionaires, it's everybody. It has these save the planet agendas and everything. So basically the foods that we we got here with, or they're not in our reach anymore because they've been able to reinvent the seed in ways that, once again, people do not understand.
Yeah. And then there's the crop trust. I have a question about the seed vault. I mean, it just seems to me that there's something nefarious going on here and that they're centralizing a lot of these seeds. And I'm very concerned about seeds being lost or destroyed. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't seem like it's the smartest, most honest, transparent plan. The vault already had a catastrophic flooding because they thought of everything but flooding, and it just, yeah, they don't.
They spent like $20 million or something on that to fix that flood. Well, whenever they lead with fear, you know, it's got to be somewhat nefarious. I mean, it's called the Doomsday Vault. So if everything that ever, you know, we disappeared as a species and there was a couple of, 100,000 people left or whatever, the seeds would be safe. You know, screw humanity and its health right now. But if we get close to going back to nothing again, then, we got some seeds. And I understand you have to have seeds and you have to protect seeds. But whenever they have everything, under lock and key, and the people that have that lock and key are the ones that are modifying the seed that we are consuming right now, there's something nefarious. I don't care who you are. That's just what's going on.
Yeah, we don't need to speculate on what. It just seems odd. Yes. I was kind of startled. And then sort of you see this crop trust, which I'm not really sure what the crop trust does, but it just the players involved, the Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, they're the same people that are kind of involved with the seed vault. And it seems like the chairman of the crop trust was this Canadian, Margaret Kately Carlson. She was also the president until 1999 of the New York-based Population Council under, the Rockefeller Foundation, as well as, and she sat on the board of the Syngenta Foundation, which is one of these like Monsanto, DuPont-like, but Chinese companies.
Yeah.
So it's just really startling, sort of all these connections.
It was pretty fascinating. Syngenta, the, Chinese, Kim, whatever it was, that company, and you follow her trail and her involvement, and you look at it, and I think I've said this before, but there's a little site I use, and it's called Little Sister or littlesis.org, and you can kind of map out some names, and you can basically create a path of association and contributions and donations and shell companies. And you can go pretty deep into some people if you have some research skills. But if you pop up, the donors that are basically involved with the vault, every one of them are the ones that are controlling your food right now and introducing all these new fake commodities that I've been telling you about, as far as fake protein, 3D protein, just everything that they're introducing into our food system again, creating this new fake layer of a commodity on, our fake value of our dollar again. And they're trying to make it look like they're saving the world and we're protected if the world, we go through doomsday. So it's just, you can talk about that forever and ever, and it gets kind of old after a while, but it's good to be aware of it, and it's saying, okay, this is what's going on. And if you put some time into it, once again, that's why I wrote the Substack the way I did, to kind of tell a story to where you can kind of just, once a day or whatever, just go through it and you'll have a better understanding. And it's going to lead up to now and with what we're doing.
Yeah. And what really blew my mind is, we sort of talked a lot about how industrial food has been weaponized in a way that the very end consumer is the trash can. Food should be the fuel source, but instead it's become sort of the pollution that gets recycled through us. And, kind of to take it in a little bit of a different direction, I'm gonna read a little bit from High Bio's Lifestyles. We know this, there is an epidemic that has been created by the need for dopamine hits every couple of minutes in our daily life. The marketing giants have the analytics, they know human behavior, and they know you better than you know yourself. They are designing your lifestyle in ways that you are not aware of. They are now developing a new form of marketing that will be based on predictive behavioral analysis
and they will use augmented reality and the up to second date of and purchasing habits. You will have your own avatar that will be telling you what to buy and when to buy certain items. It will order a new pair of shoes for you on a Saturday morning after you get paid. It will know the trends. It will know how long you have owned the prior pair of shoes. It will know how many steps you have taken in those shoes. It will understand your health in ways that have been analyzed each day. It will also advise you on what kind of exercise you need to participate in over the weekend. And guess what? It will tell you what kind of food you should be consuming, and most people will listen. We are more connected now as a human race than we have ever been, but in many ways, we are more disconnected from our personal selves than ever. This is, of course, a major accomplishment and a driving agenda of things to come. So I kind of want to turn to sort of the carbon credit economy is the Great Reset. And maybe we can outline that a little bit. So I think this is very interesting that we're going to be more connected, but, you know, very living, maybe disconnected lives.
Right. What you just said is interesting because, you know, I wrote that, I don't know, back in September or some October, I don't know. But, you know, what happened all of a sudden, you know, the new year, what's the talk? You know, it's Meta. You know, Facebook is changing to Meta. So let's put this in perspective. Whenever you're in Meta, so you're going to create, and I didn't know Meta was coming out. That was separate research that I did. And it's kind of funny that Meta came out and here we are. So within there, you create your own avatar. You sit there, you have your goggles on, and you basically, you don't have to be the real you. You can be a new you. And, you know, even though Zuckerberg himself said, you don't have to be in reality anymore. You can check out. You don't like yourself. It's okay. You're too stressed. You know, come on in. Here we are. We got it all designed for you. So once you jump into that Meta, then, you know, especially the kids, they get to learn how to purchase things that they're told. They get to do predictive analysis. They don't even have to be themselves. They can be a rock star. They can wear anything they want, but they're going to actually have to start buying that stuff because you're going to be able to make purchases because you're not going to leave your home. You're going to get on your Meta. You're going to go and tour whatever place that you have access to. And then, you know, basically you will probably, and I'm just making this up, but you'll be able to order your Domino's pizza while you're in your Meta, and then it will show up at your front door. That's coming within Facebook and these corporations. Once again, it's going to be based on consumption, and here we go. And, you know, shoes, you're going to buy your Meta shoes. You're going to do all kinds of things that you are told to do because you don't even know who you are, but you definitely can follow the orders of the Meta so you can get your dopamine rushes and you can be tracked and traced through your data. I mean, this is nothing new, but where we are, we're kicking off with everything that you just read out. And, you know, my son, he's 17 years old and he's taken his driving courses and he said, hey, Dad, he goes, because I'd told him this stuff way back, you know, it's been a while. And he said, you know, I was in class with this girl and all she did was said that she doesn't want to come to school anymore. She doesn't want to even take driving class because she's not going to have to drive anyways. She's going to be able to stay home and just stay in the Meta and stay in her augmented reality. And she was ecstatic about it. And it kind of freaked him out a little bit because, you know, this is where we are right now because he's very active. He's, you know, I made sure of it. He eats well. He's having a great life right now. But it's kind of shocking whenever a teenage person is bragging about not wanting to be involved with anything in society. That's a problem.
Yeah, I agree. No, that's it. I mean, it's with the people and the Meta, and we all see, I think we see that coming, and I get what you're saying there. But I think this was interesting. So, like, are the cows going to be on Metaverse? Like, are we going to need manual labor anymore to milk the cows? Is everything just going to be programmed? Is everything going to be on, you know, and I don't really think blockchain really serves any real useful purpose outside of Bitcoin. This is the Bitcoin matrix. We all understand that. But just to use these words, I mean, are these going to be blockchain run? Is this going to be on like Chainlink? Is it going to be like sort of farm self-reporting?
Yeah, I mean, that's where all this is going. I always just say that, you know, they're trying to digitize the cow. And so, you know, if you put that into perspective, what does that mean? Well, it means the grain has been digitized in a way. And then the consumption of the grain by the cow is digitized. And then basically, you know, then the health of the cow is digitized, and then the time that it's been alive is digitized, and just everything that you can track, you know, any track and tracing that you can do on that cow, they're going to say, you know, that it can be done, and they've got a, you know, a good blockchain, you know, whatever they're going to frame it as far as, you know, securing the safety of your consumption. And, you know, they're going to use that. And people are going to think that knowing that cow, you know, whatever that blockchain says that it did is going to make their life any easier or healthier. It's hilarious, but they're going to capture the market within certain ranchers and consumption because they're coming at them hard. And they're going to, you know, they are. It's all about surveillance of the food system. And if they can get the food system digitized to a certain extent, then they know that you're eating their food products. You're just becoming more, you know, there's more data being created, and you're buying their marketing plan of saying that you're going to save the planet by them tracking the life of this cow. And that's where the carbon credit stuff comes in, because they're going to say by their tracking all of this information of this cow, they're making sure, you know, it's not as much methane, you know, the grain that they're feeding it there. Now they're putting seaweed into, you know, the consumption of this cow because it's going to decrease the methane. They've created methane mask for cows to wear. All of this based on, you know, hey, we're going to save the planet. You know what? India has 300 million cows. United States has 94 million. And we don't have that's not a lot. China has more cows. It might be Russia actually has more cows than us. You know, you think those cows in India are going to be wearing these methane masks? Do you think that any of this Fiat Cargill BS is going to make it to these countries that have more cows than we? No, it's going to make it to the West that are based on this damn Fiat dollar, so they can create false issues and use a false money now that has very little value except for debt. And so once you've digitized that cow and saying that you're going to save the planet by digitizing the cow, you become a good consumer. You get carbon credits. And so you get a lot of carbon credits. You're a good citizen. So what does carbon credit economy move to? Well, let's look at China. What is China doing right now? They have a social credit system. You're a good civilian or you're a bad civilian. And so, you know, here in the United States, it's going to be not the same, but, you know, it'll be used and your consumption will be used against you in a way that has never been leveraged before because you think it tastes good.
Yeah. And yeah, so then they basically like we kind of get scored based on what we eat or what we consume, sure, what we do. And I mean, all of this, I think, kind of integrates together with sort of the COVID marketing plan, the food marketing plan, sort of getting us all on one maybe identification system. How are they going to invest or financialize maybe our consumption or lack of consumption or our carbon credits? Are there going to be hedge funds that they could trade sort of
sure,
Texas Slim versus Sed Youngelman versus Pleb number three?
Pretty much. I mean, you know, this is going to be a new chapter. People are finally starting to talk about it. I think I brought it up, I don't know, last summer. But if you look at stakeholder capitalism and understand what stakeholder capitalism is and kind of dive into it, you know, you have the human capital bond markets that are created by that. Well, I think after the kind of the human capital bond markets, we're going to go into, you know, that type of hedge fund, where you are the product and you get put in certain categories basically on your consumption. And, you know, they can look at that as far as what you have been consuming. They can pretty much know what kind of health you have because you're dependent on their food supply and you shop at the same place. You buy the same things. You use the same credit card, or maybe it'll be digital currency by then and you don't even have to worry about it. You don't even have to pay. You just get digital credits given to you or taken away from you. You know, this is where they're going. This is what they're attempting to do. And so once they control the food and control your consumption and know that you are the product and that your consumption matters to them, you know, they have captured you in a way that you don't understand, because your nutrition and your brain power is being controlled by the nutrition that they say is saving the planet.
Yeah. Another, you know, just on another level, that one of the things I think you said that really kind of blew my mind was just around, you know, we were talking a lot about capture here and how a lot of these mm-hmm. systems capture entities and people and steer them or manipulate them by design. And one thing that just, I never really thought about this way, maybe at this angle, but it was just around debt capture mm-hmm. and how we see countries with maybe the most debt. I think maybe if you look at Australia and Canada, yeah. maybe you could elaborate on this. You know, I mean, it's just kind of integrating with other decisions and sort of these global forces.
Sure.
What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, you know, I think I brought up debt capture with, I think it was on Adam Curry's podcast, yeah. maybe. And you look at Australia. I mean, they're front running crazy right now. They're front running corruption in the government, as far as they're locking their citizens down. And because I know this, because I have friends in Australia, and it's not good over there. It's pretty crappy, and they're worried and they're concerned. But if you look at the debt of, you know, Australia, look at their debt to the West, and you look at their debt to China. And so if you look at countries that have a lot of debt, then they're probably going to get pawned off a little bit and saying, hey, we got you. You're going to pretty much do what we say. And I think there's going to be a pattern that you're going to see here in the after effects of the last 24 months about the type of debt capture that happened within countries' economies. And you're going to see who pushes for these digital currencies. You're going to see who pushes for certain types of foods, you know, and systems and shipping lanes. I think you know this because you do a lot of macro looking. You know, there's a lot of things that are happening on the macro level as far as shipping lanes, just with, you know, the trying to do the new Silk Road with China. You know, there's a lot of things that are going on. There's a lot of positioning. And if you look at Canada and Australia, they're not in the best position. What does Canada do? I mean, they have some minerals and stuff like that. But if you look at their debt and kind of how far they've gone down this COVID narrative, you look at Australia, you look at their debt, you see how far they've gone down this COVID narrative, you're going to start seeing things that you'll see play out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot to take in, and I want to turn more towards what we can do. So we've kind of outlined a lot of these external macro forces, but you said it earlier. I mean, cargo is going to cargo, but like, it's not going to let it impact your life. You know, it's not absolute terms. Maybe you're going to use that tarp, or, you know, maybe you'll eat some ramen the next time you're in Fiji, but we're going to figure things out and come up with solutions. So, you know, you wrote, guess what? Most people will be okay with this because they live in an idealistic cloud of do-gooding. That is the new form of modern day feudalism. I think that's a great way of summarizing a lot of while people are just sort of like drinking the Kool-Aid, because I think it does sort of breaks tension or their own anxiety, because they can kind of think of these other problems that are external and sort of focus on these things that might not change anything in any real sense, but it's an outlet and they don't have to look at these real things or ask questions. But I want to turn to like what you've been up to lately in the last few months and what you've been building and what we can do as individuals.
Sure. I mean, whenever I first started doing everything, just the writing, I didn't have a direction. You know, like I said today, I was heading to Thailand, and then I was going to do Thailand, and then I was going to go out to Florida, and I was going to be part of the ocean, and I was going to travel. And, you know, that was very, very important to me, you know, as a person. And so by knowing that my access to the type of freedom that I lived my whole life, because I've been pretty strong in my desire to see this world and to meet people. So whenever all of this happened, you know, I didn't know where this was going to go. I didn't have a clue what I was doing, but I knew that I had to do something. And it kind of lit a fire up my ass, because, you know, I grew up with a lot of grit. I grew up with a lot of, you know, good life lessons that were very low time preference. And so I was able to really focus on the corruption. And, you know, at this time, and, you know, I try to be, and I'm not trying to be an asshole whenever I don't want to talk about anybody, you know, in the past. It's because right now I'm pretty damn pissed off. and I'm going to do something about it. So what we've done is we've created this thing, and it's called the, you know, it's the Beef Initiative, and I've hinted about it. Well, it was just an idea. I was going to start getting half a cow or a cow and driving it across from here to Austin. And I was going to, you know, do a transaction in Bitcoin. And that was the idea. And I was in the gym that day, and that's what I thought. I said, this is something I can do. And I felt pretty cool with that idea. Well, I just started living in some more truth, and I started diving in, and I started talking to people, and I started getting some ideas, because I'm a pretty good producer as far as production and ideas and facilitating and networking. It's kind of what I do. My past history, when I was in communications, I mean, in the telecommunications, I tied people together. And so I said, well, you need to leverage what you've done in the past. You need to forget about Thailand, Florida, everything. Let's get this going. And what is going to be your why? And why am I doing this? Well, I can tell everybody right now, the only thing and the only reason I'm doing this is to deliver pure animal protein to our kids. That is the most important thing that we can do for them. They lost 2 years of innocence. And if you're not being part of this awakening and this awareness that is going on, that the amount of innocence that has been lost in this world, then you're not paying attention. And so I put all that in motion. I put some drive together, and I basically, this week we're working on the Beef Initiative platform. There's a lot to unfold here. And the Beef Initiative platform is starting off, and we're going to bring some communities together. We're going to bring the ranchers into the Bitcoin world. We're going to bring the Bitcoin world into the ranchers world. And I'm going to use the Beef Initiative as a platform to work. And we're going to start some mass communications, and we're going to start really talking to each other. Because believe it or not, the ranchers out there, the people that do this animal protein for their life, they are decentralized in a way that a lot of people don't understand. And it's a good thing, because it's based on heritage. It's based on how our grandparents did it. They're there. They want to hear from us as far as Bitcoiners. So we're going to launch the platform very soon, and we will, and we are very proud of this. We will be selling beef boxes through the platform from a rancher that can be shipped across the United States, and you'll be able to pay in Bitcoin. And we've got that transactional layer pretty much almost complete. It's not complete, but we're getting very close. And so we're going to start off with doing that with one or two ranchers, and then we're going to grow. We're going to invite ranchers to come into the initiative, learn about Bitcoin. Let us teach you about Bitcoin. You keep on teaching us about pure animal protein. We need you. And we want you to know that we need you. We need your education, and we need your perspective, and we need your wisdom. And we want to teach you about is something called Bitcoin that has a base layer value that you don't understand yet. And let us be your steward in that direction, and you'll be a steward in our direction. And so what we're going to do now is we're going to have a Beef Initiative conference. Our first one's going to be in Kerrville, Texas, and it's going to be April 23rd. And it's going to be a Friday, Saturday type Sunday. We're going to have speakers. We're going to bring a capital company in there so we can kind of have a curriculum around teaching ranchers about an investment into, you know, a capital company where we can have some protection on with the Bitcoin network, with the Bitcoin standard that we're all trying to get everybody to understand. So there's going to be some very good formal education about Bitcoin at these conferences. Well, we're also going to have some regenerative people. We're going to have ranchers at this conference, and there's going to be a lot of education, and we're going to really bring some two parties, and we're going to start acting like a bridge right now for everybody to start this conversation. And so we can dual, you know, and in a symbiotic way, start understanding each other's world. So we can go to a destination that's going to basically put the value of the cow will be stored in Bitcoin. That is our agenda, 100%. And we want this to be a national thing. It started out just in Texas, but then we're going to have Kerrville. Then we're going to have Crawford, Colorado in the summer, either June or July. And then we're looking at a place in South Georgia. And if anybody knows about South Georgia, you might know what I'm talking about, but I can't say anything about it right now. But it'll be out at another ranch. And then we're looking for another one, maybe, I don't know where it's going to be, but maybe in, you know, December or maybe before Thanksgiving. So we're definitely having four conferences about, you know, across the United States. And we're going to have a lot of education. We're going to try to live stream them. And so if you can't be there, that you can, you know, tune in and everything. We're also going to have medical people at these that have basically kind of stepped out of the medical as it is. And they're going to talk about medical. And then we're going to talk about some nutrition as well, based on carnivore, based on the cow and animal protein. So they're going to be very good curriculums. And so if, as we're doing that throughout the year, you know, we'll be having some speaking, but we're going to grow the beef industry. But one thing that is very important for everybody to understand, and this is going to be pretty exciting for me, is in the state of Texas, we have more rules and less rules and regulations, or different rules and regulations when it comes to processing. So what we're going to do with the beef initiative is we're going to start really focusing on processing centers across the state of Texas. We want to have micro processing centers in each county across the state of Texas. That's 254 counties. So we have a lot of work to do, but I've been having some discussions with people that have built processing centers in the state of Texas. I'm going to have tours to several processing centers in the state of Texas. And these are not these big processing centers, but you know, the JBS and the Cargills. These are community-based processing centers, to where if you want to do one cow a week and you need to have a processing center in your community, you can come to the Beef Initiative and we will advise you. If you want to do 30 cows a week, we're going to advise you. And so we have connections now with people at Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance. We've been talking with them. We have connections to the Ogallala Commons, which is a community based to help small communities build their communities again. We're building a pretty strong network of ranchers already. I'm starting to do podcasts with ranchers that are doing regenerative, and we're bringing basically what they are doing, their successes that they're having, where they're located, so people can find out who they are. Within the platform itself as well, we're going to have a section that's called Mind Your Protein. If you have anything you want to say or write, we're going to take, you know, people can put input to us. They can come to it and say, you know, if it's a recipe, they can give the recipe. But if it's a cut of a cow, if it's anything that they're doing with that cow, anything that has to do with animal protein, they can submit something so we can start sharing this and crowdsourcing some intelligence based around animal protein, the cow, you know, poultry, hogs, everything. So it's going to be a kind of a fun little, you know, production that we get to pull off with crowdsourcing. And then the other one is that we're going to have a database. It's going to have, you know, animal protein producers and suppliers across the United States that want to be heard. And so they'll be on the initiative. So if you want to find somebody that's locally, come to the Beef Initiative and you'll be able to do a search and figure out, you know, hey, I'm in California in this region. These are the places I should be looking at. We've been working on that data for a while, and it's pretty hard because it's hard to scrape, because they make it difficult to know exactly what type of producer you are. And so it gets kind of muddy, but we're going to start with a pretty good database. So, and then if you're, you know, shopping, and if you're buying your beef locally somewhere, then you can come to the Beef Initiative and put in your local animal producer, you know, your rancher, your grass farmer, you know, your, if it's, you know, lamb, if it's hog, whatever, you can bring it to the Beef Initiative. That way you can say, hey, you know, go talk to the Beef Initiative, you know, as far as that rancher, and get them involved too. And you know that they're listed and we're trying to help them out. Yeah. And so we're going to make this a very big collaboration. And, you know, the processing arm of the Beef Initiative, I think, is going to be very, very solid in the long run, because we're going to come with a lot of precedents. My local producer, actually, Justin, people have heard his podcast. He passed his inspection in the state of Texas. One of the head inspectors of the state of Texas came to his processing plant and to his inspection and said that he is a model for the state of Texas. And the head processor and the head inspector of the state of Texas also said that He is the model that he wants to be spread all over the state of Texas. So within the government of the state of Texas, we have people on our side. We have legislators on our side. So I want to really start focusing with the Beef Initiative that we're going to bring these processors across the state. There's a lot of people already lining up that has money and they need the guidance. They need the advising because these rules and regulations, they're all very detached. And so they're hard to put together whenever you have different departments. And within processing, what happens is the rules and the regulations are geared to these big processing centers as far as JBS or these regional processing centers. And whenever you're a small processor, you basically get judged in a different way that's not fair because you're having to, you know, put up to standards of these bigger processing centers. And so there's a lot that's playing around right now within the processing centers, but there's a lot of good positive things happening in the state of Texas. And I want everybody else to come along and follow what we're doing in Texas and let's hit your state and let's get you to a certain point where you can, and let's start learning how to build some legislation, some lobbying, whatever it takes, we're going to bring that within the Beef Initiative. Because I do have people reaching out to me. Some of them want to stay anonymous, but some people are pretty, that have been in this for a long time. They are experts and they're doing it on their own now and they're doing it differently and they're having success. And that goes from farmers, and that goes to ranchers, and that goes to processors. There's something going on there and there's some movement and some momentum, and we're going to try to be a part of facilitating that this year in 2022. And the one thing that's going to be very important to me is that we can get the rancher to understand that there's a new protection for his legacy. There's something there that we're going to be able to let him understand and educate him on. And he doesn't have to, nobody can really tell me when I ask him, where is the value of the cow right now? And where is it? Is it in the subsidy? Is it in the USDA insurance that they file every year? Is it in the grain that Cargill's feeding that cow? Because whenever Cargill feeds that cow that grain, the cow is a byproduct of that grain. The grain's what's making that profit. The cow's not making all that great a profit. And so where is the value of the cow now? If we can get the store value of the cow within a Bitcoin standard, the value of that cow goes up tremendously because it becomes a low time preference cow and consumption model. It's a land tool. It's taking care of the land. It's saving the planet because what it's doing is being regenerative. It is giving back. And so we're going to get there. This is going to be a fun and this is going to be a long battle, but there's a lot of people out there that are paying attention. And I feel pretty confident right now, like where we are. We're further along than I thought we were going to be.
Yeah, that's awesome. We talk a lot about the ranchers.
Sure.
And I remember, you know, growing up, either whether it was, you know, driving cross country or even going to New York City, I would just look at the apartment buildings and I would wonder who lived there, who made Chinatown happen.
Right.
You know, and you think about some place like Chinatown or any sort of place that has a sort of an insular neighborhood community or a circular economy, they can kind of have their own rules, their own systems, their own way of life. You know, I think about sort of like people who go to Alaska or grew up in Alaska and they fish or they crab and they, you know, spend 6-9 months on the boats. That's a different way of life, disconnected from probably like a lot of modern way of life in America. I've learned a little bit about cows, not a lot, but I heard Jason Lowry talking about just how, you know, I mean, we've been domesticating and grooming these creatures for 4,000 years. And you know, we sort of picked them and groomed them to be more domesticated and sort of tameable and all these different things. There's just so much history here and a way of life. And so you've gotten to meet some of these ranchers. And even when I drive across America and, you know, whether I'm in Wisconsin or Florida, I've been in spending a lot of time in Florida. I'm going to move to Florida soon. I'm voting with my feet. I'm going to escape communist Chicago. And, you know, I've been visiting Florida now for 15 years. My parents are down there and I've been going to this farm, this local farm that's been there for about 100 years. And it's primarily a citrus farm. But they now, you know, have a general store.
And they've always had, they used to sell the oranges outside of, you know, under the oak tree, but now they have a store, and in the store they got tchotchkes and a little food and ice cream. And they even have like a rescue farm for animals that have been rescued, and they show the kids the animals, and they got a play area and weddings. I mean, you can see that they've had to get into so many businesses to just keep the farm going. They now do bamboo. They're the largest grower of bamboo in America, and they export it all to Chinatown, and or I should import, send it to Chinatown, and I think even to China. But they've had to get into so many things, but it's a way of life. So what has it been like when you've met these ranchers? Are they sort of are some of them been ranchers for generations, or some new ranchers, and are they connected to the modern way of life? Are they disconnected?
Yeah, it's hard to generalize across the board, but the one thing that all of them are, no matter where they are in, you know, in positioning of being a rancher in the United States of America, one thing that they do is they love ranching. It's just, it's who they are, you know. And you ask, where are they with understanding the system in which they're participating in, you know, to be able to raise, produce, and have their protein processed, it's across the board. And the interesting thing about it is there's a lot of awareness, though. A lot of people are really starting to look at the regenerative side of things, because I'm starting to see what the dividing lines are within the ranchers and what they're really paying attention to, as far as being aware of, you know, the technology use agreements or whatever it is, as far as the contracts that they sign. And people are paying attention to the regenerative guys, and they're saying, hey, how are you doing this? And we want to learn more. And the people that have reached out to me and that I've visited with and been, you know, on their places, is every one of them is very, very positive and very confident that they're doing the right thing, and they're actually going to have a better living now. And they're feeling something, that there's going to be a shift, and they feel like right now this is going to be the shift. It's not going to happen on a mass scale. We're talking low time preference here. This is a generational thing that's going to play out. But you brought up about who are, I talked to Jason Rich the other day. He's got Rich Ranches out in Colorado, and he's a first generation rancher. And it's amazing everything that he's been able to pull off. I think he was only going to have less than 400 acres, and now he has 4,000 acres that he is taking care of. He's getting working cattle. He's building the land. He's regenerizing the land. He's helping build fences. He goes out and leases land and says, I'll take care of your land for you. You know, you're not using this land. Let me put some cattle on it. And people are starting to say, well, this is actually a pretty good idea. You know, somebody's looking after my land. Maybe it's a widow that has used to have a ranch, and they don't know how to take care of it. They have equipment out there on, you know, this land that he leases. If there's a tractor out there, he's using the tractor. There's something that's going on that's kind of a new movement. And a lot of my messages that I'm receiving are young people wanting to know how to get into this. I spoke with Will Harris the other day out at White Oak Pastures. And, you know, he's talking about everybody that's, you know, where he is. If you haven't ever seen White Oak Pastures, look it up. It's he's been doing this for 25 years. You know, he sells a lot. He was the first person to ever sell organic grass-fed beef to Whole Foods, you know. So he knows about market access. He knows how to get into this. You know, he's very positive, but he's very pragmatic as well. So he's a very good educational piece that people can leverage if you're interested in getting started. So what I see there with the ranchers that I've talked with, and I'm going to be visiting a lot of them here moving forward, because I think this year I'm basically going to be traveling across the United States a lot. And I'm going to visit, just because in the beginning I said I was going to go up to ranchers and shake their hands and look them in the eyes and say, how can I help you? Well, I've been doing that, and it's being very effective, because I have some very good, intelligent people coming my way that want to be heard, and they want to educate the United States on this is what's really going on with our food. You need to look over here. Quit paying attention to that you know, you brought up earlier, the medical, pharmaceutical, agricultural complex is the same damn thing.
MPAC.
Yeah, MPAC. So
I got it from you. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's a lot of awareness. There's a lot of people going, oh, wow, crap. We are kind of captured here in a way that maybe there is an option. Once they start looking in this direction, start pointing their compass over in this direction, we're going to educate them and saying there's a solution here. All of this Bitcoin stuff, you know, for anybody that's listening to this, that's new or whatever, this Bitcoin is something that, as far as what we're doing with Bitcoin, the network, the protocol, the idea, the philosophy, the ethos, the value for value, you know, understanding what Bitcoin is all about, that's coming to our food, and I'm going to bring it. And there's going to be a lot of people that come along, and there's going to be ranchers that are not going to understand at the beginning, but those ranchers are going to come, and we're going to be ready for them, and we're going to white glove them into this new decentralized protocol that they're going to be able to use. And we have a very good team. And I want everybody in the Bitcoin world, I know people are going to pick us apart just because that's what happens when you have launches, but I want everybody out there to understand this is a low time preference thing. And I've said this many times, we're going to punch whenever, we're going to counterpunch when they punch every time. You know, I said several months ago, I said, you get ready for these marketing plans that are going to come out. And they're going to be about this fake meat crap. You watch what happens to our food supply, everything. And I'm not trying to be braggadocious, but it's unfolding, and you're seeing it in the grocery stores. You're seeing it across the world, and they're advertising fake meat. They're taking protein out of your children's food systems, and they're feeding them soy. They're feeding them poison. And, you know, I talked to a doctor the other day, and it's an anonymous doctor, and she sees teenage boys across the United States of America. Okay. And she's located in the South. The one thing that she said, and this is from a doctor that's very qualified, all the teenage boys that are coming into her office on general, kind of as a standard of measurement, are coming in about 200 with their T cell levels. Okay, these are teenage boys in the United States of America. Those T cell levels should be over 1,000 at least. Do you think that is not by design, that they're trying to do that to your children, to your boys, to make them less of a man? She's worried. She, you know, she said that the even beyond the T cell level counts, that they have no desire to even really have relationships with girls. And this is something that she sees as patterns. So why is this happening? Well, it has to do with a lot, you know, it has to do with plastics and the poisons and everything. But collectively, the one thing that it has to do with the most is the food, because everybody's letting their children eat pizza pockets and chicken tendies instead of knowing what food really is. And so we've got to really bring that education. Once again, it's not a judgment, but I have doctors and I have nutritionists, and they want to talk. So we're going to consolidate everybody together, and we're going to really create a new narrative that really, I don't think is going to be able to be touched, because I firmly believe that we're going to put this decentralized thought process into a decentralized food system that's going to have a base layer of value. And we all know what that is.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, even that was just an incredible lot to unpack there.
Sure.
You know, I mean, just around, you know, the innocence for our children has really just been destroyed at this point, in terms of, really the forces are just strong, and I got to move to Florida to get some innocence back for them, or to just get freedoms back for them. You know, this notion of, you know, Bitcoin fixes this. You know, when I found Bitcoin, you know, I was like, oh, okay, all my problems are solved. And, you know, it was like, no, Bitcoin fixes this. Yeah, but like, so it did solve a lot of problems for me, and it's solving problems, and I think it solves all the problems. But it's what it really means, listening to you talk and having all these shows, is just, we got a lot of problems to fix. And yes, Bitcoin will fix these things. It fixes these things, but it doesn't fix them today for you.
No.
You know, it's a Swiss Army knife, and it applies to a lot of these things, and it creates rails. And, you know, but like, you know, something that came out of our last conversation is like, if you think they fucked up the money, wait till you hear about the food. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, and we've kind of covered that. One thing that was really interesting, though, is just with the ranchers. I mean, I really think they're getting reoriented, at least the ones that are being reached, around, you know, where the real profit margin is for them. Because if they play the game the way that it's designed to capture them, there is no true profit margin for them. There's every 12 months, they got to reinvent the seed. They got to reinvent the crop. They got to deal with, you know, market forces that are outside their control. And it's not even real money, real market forces, you know, and they're crushed.
Well, I'll tell you this real quick, just because this is coming from me. You go out there and you go up to a rancher and you say, how did you survive this year? Certain, not across the board, but you're going to get a majority of ranchers say the only reason I survived this year was because of USDA insurance. And, you know, if I'm wrong, you guys come tell me that I'm wrong. Let's talk about it. I'd love to have you on my podcast so you can correct me and let me know if that's not the case. And so you look at, like I said, where is the value of the cow? And that's where it is. It's in a lot of places it shouldn't be. And the value of the cow is not in making sure that your child is as strong and as powerful and as smart and as healthy as he or she should be. The value of the cow should be a direct line to your children's brains so they can have a chance in this life. And so they can be stronger and understand the world that they live in. And so that they can be empowered in a way that, you know what, the last 2 years is disgusting how our kids have been treated and how they've basically been robbed of that innocence. I remember being a young boy. I remember being in a small town in Texas where I had freedom, to where I could really be free as an innocent boy and see things that weren't based on fear. In the amount of fear that we've been putting into the brains of our citizens in the United States and across the world, it is a psyop that a lot of people don't want to admit to. Well, just think about all these children that had to cover up their face and they don't understand facial recognition now, as far as understanding emotional types of expressions. This is going to have problems. And so one thing that we can do, and once again, it starts with the food. I know we talk about Bitcoin fixes this. It doesn't fix anything unless we put action into it. You know, you can go for about a year into Bitcoin, and if you're not building something and you're not changing your life within that year on a major way, then great, good for you. You didn't need to make any changes. You're top notch. But there's a lot of people out there that, you know, if they're not building after a year in some form of their life, then they're not paying attention, because there's tons of opportunity out there. I'm having a blast. My life is fantastic right now because I feel like I'm making a change. And I think that, you know, my purpose is to basically get some awareness out there that it changes a couple of people's lives. I have a guy that he's a local guy. His name, I'm going to give him a call out. His name is Isaac. He came up to me. He said, ever since I've been reading what you've been doing, you helped change my life. And he was very, I was kind of taken aback. I was very, you know, happy, and, you know, I was humbled. And so, and this is a stranger, and I hope that a lot of people are listening to, because there's a lot of young guys coming up to me and saying, hey, you know, I appreciate what you're doing. I've had people from, you know, Sweden saying, hey, I'm listening to you. Thank you for what you're doing. So it's not a trend. This is not a trend. This is something that's going to happen. And I think that, you know, by doing and me not compromising what that little innocence was when I was a little boy, and how very important that is, innocence is to our children. And even as adults, we need to learn how to play again. We need to know how to love again. We need to know how to trust again. And we need to know how to have power again. And if you think that we're going to get there by doing the status quo, as far as our consumption model is concerned, then you're kidding yourself. So let's have fun doing it. Let's create this new lifestyle, some of adventure. You know, we should all be planning trips that we don't have to worry about, that we have a digital passport. If they're going to cut off certain channels of transportation, well, we're going to create new channels of transportation and entertainment. We're going to turn the Netflix off on a Saturday. We're going to get in the car and we're going to go drive and we're going to meet somebody and they're going to be able to help feed us. And we're going to become very good friends with that person because they're going to be a rancher that really is very, very proud of what he or she does. And once we have that relationship, that is going to be a lifestyle. Christmas comes, holiday comes, you're going to communicate with these people because you're going to understand the value of eating and consuming pure animal protein. If that is not fun, I don't know what is. I mean, I love to road trip. I've driven across the United States, I don't know how many times, and there's something there. I've been all over the state of Texas, since not all over the state, but a lot of the state. And basically I'm seeing these small towns. I'm seeing some heritage again, and it's a cool place to do. And there's a lot of small towns out there that if you're wanting to get out of the city, you want to build, you've got opportunity. And the world has changed. We live in a digital world. That's never going to go away. So leverage your skill sets, leverage your desires, change it up a bit. And, you know, let's get busy building as a community. I want a bunch of hungry young Bitcoiners out there traveling around the country, onboarding these ranchers. What a great life. I mean, I would do that if I was in my 20s. That's what I did. But I didn't have Bitcoin and I didn't have these ranchers to talk to in the way that we need to talk to. But I told somebody the other day, I said, man, you need to put a, he has a truck. And I said, you need to put a camera on that and you need to get in because he wants to help. And I said, he had some money. He was, I think I have about a year's worth, you know, that I don't have to work and I can get into Bitcoin and, you know, contribute. I said, I'll tell you what, you start road tripping across the United States and we'll start talking and we'll start onboarding these ranchers. And anybody that can come along can do that because we're going to use the Yoshi app. That's who we're partnering with. If you onboard ranchers, okay, you're going to get sats back on every purchase that or every sell that rancher ever does. And so you can go around and onboard ranchers and be getting sats back and traveling across the United States. I think that's something that's going to happen. I'm pretty confident in that.
Yeah. Shout out to Yoshi app. I'd love to have Michael on sometime soon.
Yes.
You know, my parents were public school teachers. So, you know, we spent the summers doing a lot of road trips, either traveling the United States right. or just road tripping somewhere. I mean, even my father, though, he worked a lot of flea markets as a second job. So even he wasn't just hanging out, but we made it happen. And, you know, it's like, I think a lot about with my children and, you know, I got even maybe a little turned around in my 20s. I was so disconnected from food. And then when I started thinking about where food came from and sort of the industrial mechanizations of food, I got turned off very much. I became sort of a pescatarian. I gave up meat for 10 years.
Wow.
And, you know, and, you know, at first it was great. I lost a little weight, but then you get, you know, the grain brain and it's not great, but you know, you sort of think you're being altruistic and you're virtue signaling and you're right. You know, and all these things. And, you know, I'm dealing with my kids now. My kids, thank God, they love steak, but you know, I'm really thinking a lot about, you know, sort of the physical and spiritual energy we get from food. Cause when they do ask me questions about what animals is from and is this okay? And I want to make them feel not that I want to make them. I want to give them advice and guidance. They're going to decide for themselves eventually, but I'd like to guide them towards that. This is good. This is, you know, the animal lived a good, strong, healthy life, and it's giving its life force to you. And the animal should be treated well and kindly. And we, you know, because if you hit the animal or abuse the animal, then you're going to get that negative life force. But sure. I can't guarantee that going to Whole Foods or going to Publix that they're going to be getting the life force that they need. And that food is already competing with the other crap, the sludge and the chicken
exactly.
and all that shit. So yeah. it's brutal out there. It's, you know, and you're trying to guide them through this.
Well, it is. I heard from a rancher the other day, and it was really cool how he said it, and I'll try to get as close as possible. But he said, you know, there's something about, you know, being part of, you know, raising cattle, and you're doing it in a way that is humane and is regenerative and is based on, you know, doing it the right way, basically for pure animal protein. He said, man, you can go out there in the morning and you can, you want to know what smells are, pure smells, and you smell the animal and it doesn't smell bad because it's clean. It's a clean animal. And he said, you can see the fog coming out of its nostrils. You can go up to that cow and feed it some, you know, some hay or whatever. And that cow's teeth are making this certain type of noise. And he made it very poetic. And he goes, I love it when parents bring their children out here because they see these animals and they understand these animals. And that's kind of the gateway into understanding how you can respect an animal and how you can give it praise, and you can praise its spirit throughout its life because you're going to nurture that animal. Those kids see that. And then that's the beginning of understanding, you know, who we are, the hierarchy of what we live in, as far as how nutrition is delivered, what that cow does to be able to give us life, and how you need to honor that. Whenever you're doing, like you just said, you know, wherever you're getting your beef from, this, I'm not going to knock anybody getting beef because we're all in this together, but you know, you're not going to get the same experience. And whenever you honor that animal in the way that he explained throughout its life to where it is stress-free, you're taking that energy that that cow took from the earth and you're bringing it into your life. And if you think that that is not true, then you don't get it. And it is true. It is wholesome. There's something that's very spiritual about it. And if you want your children to be based in life, you want them to respect, you want them to honor, you want them to be impeccable with their belief systems, get them around the cow. It's a good place to start, and get them around those smells. It sticks with you. I've been around animals off and on my whole life, trained horses, broke horses, been around cattle, nothing. There's some damn good cowboys out there that have done a hell of a lot more than me. So, you know, I'm half and a half here, so I'm not trying to brag, but I've been part of that family. I've been part of that mindset, and there's nothing better than being there. In instead of Disneyland, you better get out on a ranch. And we're going to hopefully do that in the fall to where families can come and bring the kids to these conferences. And so there's a lot of people that out there that we're probably not talking about this enough, as far as 4-H, all these programs that are available in the public school systems. And you don't have to be out there the person that, you know, that raises this bull or this hog. You can start in different ways, and you can participate in 4-H in different ways. There's all kinds of programs to get our kids understanding what food is again, and where it comes from, and how you can honor your food system and actually be very confident in your consumption instead of basically addicted to your consumption. I don't think about eating, Cedric. I mean, I eat protein, and it's not something that I obsess about. It's not something my body tells me that I have to do all the time. I don't get hungry. You know, I eat one or two times a day. And, you know, I'm 6'1" and I weigh 178 pounds, and that's not bragging. That's just because I eat beef, and that's just, I could be, you know, I could gain weight. I really could. And I just don't allow myself because I don't think about it. I just stay busy and I stay active and I eat protein. We don't have to reinvent nutrition here. We don't have to be scientists to understand that if you eat pure animal protein, your life is going to be pretty dang good. So make some changes and kind of look in this direction saying, well, it's a start. You know, what is bad about it? Your kids eating healthy, you eating healthy. It's not that much more expensive. I spend less money eating beef than I did buying groceries. And, you know, I did that most of my life for the most part, but the last, you know, year or two, you know, the more I've eaten, just stayed with protein, my grocery bills aren't, well, I don't go to the grocery store that much, but my food bills are not that expensive anymore. But I do have some good relationships with some ranchers too. So.
All right. I have all the questions. I have so many questions. In fact, all the questions, but
okay.
I got one more left for you tonight.
All right.
So one of the things I really like how you put it is, you know, mining your protein is sort of this analogy to Bitcoin, but it's just great. It's just, you know, like, how are you going to acquire, obtain, secure your Bitcoin, your protein?
And yeah. You mentioned there, though, that, like, you know, you just focused on eating as fuel, and it's not really like, oh, I'm hungry. You eat when you get it all in and then you're good. Right. I get that. But I got a couple of young kids. Right. So let's imagine you came over to my house. I'd love to have you over. We're going to have you over for dinner. We grill up some nice ribeyes, right? Mm-hmm. Open flame. We do it right. Salt and pepper. That's all it is. Beautiful ribeyes. And then after dinner, my little girl and my wife present you with a chocolate chip cookie. You don't know if it's from Toll House. It's a bullshit, or they made it with their own flour and eggs and milk, and it's all beautiful. Are you eating the cookie? Are you partaking in sort of that social cultural phenomena of, you know, shared food when that moment comes? You know, it's not just about sure. I'm gonna get my 12 my 4, 6, 8, 10 ounces of ribeye, whatever you eat, but this is like some sort of community moment. Are you eating the cake at the wedding? It's a good piece of cake. It's not bullshit. Are you eating the cake? It's all sugar. Sure. And whatever.
Well, you know, I think that goes down to, you know, timing and basically balance in life. And I think that's what we don't discuss enough. If you're inviting me into your home, I would never, never disrespect you and turn down anything. That's just rude. So I'd never do that. No, I don't indulge in a lot of sweets. The more I get away from them, as far as we'll concentrate on sweets or the cake or the cookie. Yeah, I'm going to indulge, you know, everyone's not sure, you know, this is not something that I get obsessive about. I don't have to get obsessive. If I'm at a wedding, you bet I'm going to eat that cake. You know, I'm going to participate in life. I'm not going to be that person. I'm not that person. I'm not obsessive when it comes to things. I'm pretty laid back, and, you know, I go with a pretty slow roll. And so if it's there, sure, man, let's indulge. Let's have a good time and let's laugh about it or whatever. Let's bring some humor to it. But, you know, we're not going to make it into a habit. And such, you know, whenever you're in the right situation in life, assess the situation and do the right thing, you know, be able to have that type of mindset saying, you know, there's not a lot of consumption problems in our country are based on a lot of guilt, you know, because it's hard to put down the food that has been engineered to make us consume. And a lot of people out there struggle with that. And I really respect that struggle, because it is a struggle. It is an addiction. Food is a drug, man. It is. It's to the point that it's a drug. And, you know, you're going to argue that, but, you know, alcohol is a drug. There's drugs, it's chemicals, you know? And so by saying that, there's a lot of people out there that their bodies don't even know how to get in and off of these, you know, highly processed carbohydrates. And it is a form of detox. I think I said that last time, perhaps when you and I were talking, but it's tough. It's tough to change a diet. Nobody is discounting that. What I want to really bring to the table here is that, yeah, you're going to struggle, but change is tough sometimes, and you have to be okay with change. One thing you can guarantee, if you go into this direction of a consumption model, not only is your body going to be better, but your lifestyle is going to be better in a way that you're not seeing yet. And your life is going to change with a different perspective. And, you know, you're going to get basically a form of empowerment that you haven't had before, because your brain's going to start thinking differently. And, you know, we have like I said, you know, there's a doctor, Dr. Phil Ovadia. He's a heart surgeon. He changed up his practice now is to try to keep you off of his operating table. And he knows about the cholesterol lie. He breaks down the cholesterol. He's a heart surgeon. He's 20 years. And he knows what he's doing here. And he's talking about protein. He's talking about animal protein, cholesterol. He's talking about how, you know, the brain, how much the brain is made up of cholesterol. Everything we were taught was a lie. We know this now. And if you're going to fight it, go ahead. I tell people, don't come along. Keep on consuming. Amen. But for those who want to really change and make it something that's going to be positive for your legacy of your family and your children, there's a lot of answers out there. And it's amazing once you go down this rabbit hole of what you can find. Those types of families that you're going to search out and find and have conversations with them. And it's something that we need right now, because it's a sense of hope. that, you know, is a form of maybe atonement that we've gone through as far as a society with our consumption. And it's okay to say, hey, you know, acceptance is a key right now. Let's accept it. And it's like, okay, now, and we talked about, now we're going to build, you know, and in as much as they've tried to prohibit us, you know, we're going to have mass innovation out of this. And part of that mass innovation is going to be how we look in at food and the type of food intelligence that we actually do bring forward.
Yeah. I love the food intelligence that you're pioneering and bringing to the table. It's, you know, it's one of the most important conversations of our time. It's very pressing. It's urgent.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, and it is the elephant in the room. It, whatever it is, it's the unspoken, you know, desperation that I talk about. And, you know, it's okay to admit it. It's okay to say, you know, look at, you know, everything that's coming out about the last couple of years and the people that actually died. And, you know, it was classified that it was something, and it was, you know, with just whatever, I'm not going to get into that. What we did recognize, if you're paying attention, that this country is not healthy. What we need to recognize, there was a lot of deaths because of metabolic failure in this country. And if you're discounting that, then you're in a form of denial that's not going to be very healthy for you. And so it's time, like I said, let's surround ourselves together. Let's get like-minded. Let's start building and let's start having fun with this. Come to a conference this year. Take a road trip. And maybe there's four more conferences that we're not thinking of. Let's get this beef initiative going. You know, I've not made one dime of fiat except the harvest that I went on. And beyond that, you know, people were coming at me the other day thinking that I'm kind of LARPing out there or whatever. I'm creating a brand. You damn right I'm creating a brand. I'm trying to create a whole new global beef industry here. And I mean that, in that what I mean by saying that is that it's a state of mind when we're starting this. We're creating a new state of mind that we're going to be very intentional with. And we're going to bring a lot of intelligence. And if you want to be engaged in this, you're going to enjoy the ride. And so let's work together, not against each other. Let's take this beyond Bitcoin, Twitter. Let's take it to our politicians. Let's take it to the legislations. Let's get smart about this and let's get intentional in a way that we have the power to do it. In the state of Texas, we're going to open up these processing plants using the rules and the regulations that are out there. And we're going to do it better than they know them. Once we do that, that's called precedence. Once we've set that precedence, things are going to change in this country because everything changes with food. It doesn't change with the dollar first. It changes with our consumption. And once we get that consumption to where it gives us power, it gives us the mind, you know, that we search for, the happiness, the feeling of health. Once we're there, nothing's going to get in our way. And then you want to talk about, you know, then Bitcoin's going to come and fix that because we're going to be powerful humans. We're going to be powerful people like our grandparents were in the ones that my grandfather that came and survived the Dust Bowl and the Great Depression. That's what is needed. And all those young men out there right now looking for something to do in life, you know, screw the institution. You go out there and you do what you want to do and you empower yourself with this education that's going on right now in this Bitcoin world, because there's something there and there's a lot of change coming. And I hope that the ranchers will understand that. Some of them do. K&C Cattle in Austin, Texas is going to be the first one that sells those beef boxes through the beef initiative. And he's locking in all of his, he's going to be able to ship across the United States for the 48 states. And so he's working with people. Cole is, he's working with other ranchers. We're working with ranchers. I'm going to start doing some speaking and start, you know, kind of going to these beef conferences that aren't mine and saying, hey, come over here as well. I'm going to come over here. I'm going to bring some people to talk to you as well. You know, I have some pretty good meetings coming up with capital companies. We're going to get serious about this, build a type of system investment strategy for these ranchers that we can start looking at. So we're going to hit it on every front, you know, and why not? Let's do it.
Yeah. I think you're taking all the principles that, I mean, we think of colloquially as Bitcoin principles, but skin in the game. Decentralization. I think that these things will lead to greater profits. And when I say that, it's not just about money, but greater value for all of us, for communities, sure, for families, for people. And obviously that's centered around money. I mean, money kind of helps move those things along. But, you know, really sovereignty, I think, starts with your own mind and your own decisions to think for yourself, to think critically. And I think that, you know, not going with the flow or following the crowd is going to be very a good way to go going forward. I think it's going to, you're giving me a lot of hope and optimism. I think that these things are going, it's going to be kind of like a 90-10, 80-20, 70-30 for a little while, where the hope, sure, is the 10%, yeah, and it's there and you just have to tap into it. And eventually that will be the 100% or the 90% in the new world. But, you know, the majority is still going to, there's going to be a lot of pain. And I think what's hard about this is even if you're in that 10 or 20% mindset or doing all these things, you're going to be affected by the pain going through the rest of the system. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this conversation, Texas Slim. It's always great and a pleasure to catch up. So much more to go over, and I'd love to have you back again. Sure. The floor is yours, and definitely let people know where they could find you, the podcast, the Beef Initiative, Food Intelligence, and everything you're working on.
Yeah, I'll be announcing the website soon, but of course you can get me at Modern Tea Man on Twitter. We started a Telegram group. It's at Beef Initiative, and then we have a at Beef Initiative on Twitter now as well. So we're going to put a little bit more skin in the game when it comes to the social media and everything. I'm not very good at it, but we're maintaining. So have patience with me, because I'm doing a lot these days, and it's good by design. We're going to bring more people on board. We have a pretty cool little team right now that works a lot, that stays kind of behind the scenes. And it's all been, you know, people just coming forward wanting to be a part of the Beef Initiative. We want to do that. We're going to have contributive writers. I already got two or three that they're starting to contribute, and they're going to be able to expand kind of off of the harvest of deception. We talk about soil. We're going to talk about money. We're going to talk about cattle. We're going to talk about regenerative, and just bring all these writers through, you know, the harvest of deception and the Beef Initiative newsletter. So there's a lot of, you know, contributions coming our way, and we're trying to funnel that in so everybody else can see it as well. And so, you know, once we're there and we get the Beef Initiative up, you know, my podcast, which is Texas Slim's Vision, we're getting some really good people on there. We're going to have some pretty big announcements here pretty soon, I hope. So I guess I'm going to become more of a podcaster, which I never thought I was going to be, but I'll do my best. And you just have patience with me out there, everybody. But so there's a lot happening. Whenever we do launch the site, I don't want to say what it is yet, but the Beef Initiative site will be up really soon. And we're going to have a lot of points of contact. And, you know, it's always fun talking with you, Cedric. You've always been very supportive, and follow you, listen to everything. You've been very educational to my life. And you always ask very good questions. I think we covered a lot tonight.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Texas. Yeah, man, there's so much more to go into. I can't wait to have you back. Cool. Probably before your conference. Keep me in touch on that.
Let's do that. That way we can kind of maybe shout it out there a little bit.
That sounds great. This has been so dope. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Cedric. Be cool.
Texas Slim on digitizing our food, the metaverse, technology use agreements, MPAC, and the human capital bond market, right here on the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. And this episode was brought to you by Citadel Cabins, CipherSafe, Ledin, and the Bitcoin 2022 conference. If you take your Bitcoin security seriously, go that extra step and secure it from physical disaster with a CipherWheel seed storage device. Go to CipherSafe.io and use the code MATRIX for 10% off your order to keep your sats safe. Citadel Cabins exist to help individuals achieve shelter, rest, security, and location independence. Head over to CitadelCabins.com to fill out an application now. Ledin.io is a secure, simple, and easy-to-use platform for managing and growing your digital wealth. If you want to see what it's all about and get $50 free in USDC when you take out your first Ledin loan, head over to start.ledin.io/Bitcoin Matrix. Bitcoin 2022 is the largest Bitcoin event in the world that takes place April 6th to 9th in Miami Beach, Florida. All 4 days will be jam-packed with exclusive content, exciting announcements, and an incredible lineup of Bitcoin speakers, artists, and leaders. Make sure to use the code BitcoinMatrix at checkout to get 10% off, and I will see you in Miami. And thank you for listening. Stack sats, stay humble, and stay laser-focused. This is Cedric. Peace.